Chapter 10 Invisible Cracks. Then, July. The next morning, I woke up early again, having had no trouble going to sleep without whatever it was that Karma and Michelle gave us the first night. I'd been worried I was going to be haunted by the ghost of the deer we'd dismembered, but I was asleep soon after my head hit the pillow in a way that usually only happened when I was ill. I stretched out my body in the narrow, hard bed, feeling creaks and cracks in unfamiliar places, and remembered my resolution from the day before. Morning exercise every day. Better get to it. I sat up and pulled out a clean set of clothes. I felt the phone Dan had left me in the hidden pocket of my suitcase as I rooted around. I took it out and sent him a quick text. Alive. Having fun. See you in a couple of days. I waited a second for him to respond, then hid the phone away. On my walk to the gym in the crisp morning air, I admired the view and meditated briefly on the nature of truth. Was I having fun? Yesterday I would have said no, but today, with yesterday's tasks behind me, I felt a sense of accomplishment. I'd done it. Two things I'd thought I'd never do and was glad I'd stuck to. Maybe this place wasn't going to fix my career, but there were lessons I'd retain regardless. I was the only one in the gym that morning, putting in my time and miles on the treadmill. I decided to try running for 5 minutes and then walking for five, with the goal of reaching 3 miles by the time the 45 minutes I was now committed to were over. I barely made it, but it felt like progress. Somewhere around the 30-minute mark, I started to feel less like garbage, my body finally warming up. It reminded me of how I felt when I was Peloton fit. Back in my little cabin, I gave myself a good once-over in the mirror. I was chubbier than the last time I had examined myself closely. My shins were covered in bruises from the jump into the water and the scramble out. I ran my hand along my jaw. It was slacker than the last time I checked, like I was slowly transforming into my mother, or the memory I had of her from childhood. I'd be turning 40 soon. That both freaked me out and didn't. I'd never cared that much about age, but I was starting to feel a generational split between myself and the associates. Priorities, cultural references, it was the little things at first, but they added up. That transformation from feeling entirely at ease with where you were to feeling destabilized, insecure, passed by. I turned away from myself and searched my luggage, looking for something to wear. Again, my hand hit the phone Dan had secreted away. I pulled it out, feeling like an alcoholic about to take a drink. I was so addicted to my phone. I could admit that. If I misplaced it, I felt anxious until I'd located it. I checked if Dan had written me back.
Relief, he wrote. I miss you.
I was surprised he'd written that. Dan was affectionate in actions, but not so much in words. I was always teasing him when I'd been away on a business trip. Did you miss me?
Potentially,
he'd say, grinning. Admit it, you did. He'd shrug and put his feet on the coffee table.
More sesame noodles for me.
Fucker. Eventually, I'd beat it out of him, but it's never as nice as a spontaneous message. I wrote him back. Miss you too. Just worked out. This time, he wrote back immediately.
Wow, a miracle. How's it been?
Good. Tiring.
All the goat sacrificing too much?
I shuddered. That was too close to the bone. They're not Satanists.
Why tired them?
Long hike yesterday.
Oh, you hate hiking.
I did hate hiking. I'd hidden that from Dan at the beginning of our relationship, the way you do when someone you're into loves something you don't. As a result, I'd ended up on a brutal hike with him in the Adirondacks. He quickly realized I'd been less than honest, and he was okay with it. I had other qualities, apparently.
I do, I wrote.
And yet?
One for all and all for one.
You're a musketeer?
Nope. It's more like we're a pride of lions. Lionesses.
So you're wild now?
Wilding, maybe. Someone knocked at my door.
Breakfast in 10.
It was Gary. I hid the phone behind my back reflexively. I knew Gary wouldn't be pleased if he found me with it.
Okay, thanks, I called back.
You're meeting with Karma and Michelle at 10.
Alone?
Yes. Is that a problem?
Nope. Where do I meet them? I moved closer to the door, feeling ridiculous shouting through it. The phone vibrated in my hand, another text from Dan. I held it tighter.
At the fire pit.
Okay, great, thank you. I said it as dismissively as I could, hoping he'd walk away. The sound was off, so he couldn't hear me texting, but I didn't like the thought of him lingering outside my door. I listened, frozen, until I heard him leave and knock on the door one cabin over. I checked the phone.
Where'd you go?
Dan had written. Here, sorry. Don't worry.
I do worry.
I know. How is Aunt Penny? He sent me a sad face emoji. I'm sorry, I wrote.
It's okay. We always knew we couldn't have her forever.
That almost made me cry, too. I'd started letting my walls down, and look what was happening. I have you forever, though, right?
Yes,
Dan wrote.
Forever. Whether you want me or not.
Good. I've got to go to breakfast.
Text me later.
I'll try, but if I don't worry. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
I put the phone away. I was glad we connected. Whether he missed me or not, and he did, why else hide the phone despite all his mock concern? I missed him, and that was a good thing. We hadn't always been so solid. 5 years ago, we'd almost split. Small changes could have consequences between two people. Dan not making partner, moving in-house, other stuff I'd tried to file away. We fell out of step for a while, took each other for granted, and that didn't feel good. Other couples might have left each other, but we decided to try and fix it. We had. But what I forgot to pay attention to was that when your foundation's been shaken, small fissures remain, no matter how many times you paper over the cracks. Chapter 11. Walk the Line. Then, July. In the daylight, the fire circle lost some of its magic. There was a pile of white ash in the pit, and I could see that some of the beams that created the structure above it were worn and cracked, like the wood it was made of was older than the rest of the ranch. Karma and Michelle lost some of their mystery, too. Not that I hadn't seen them in the daylight. I was naked with Michelle the day before. But back in this space that I knew by instinct they found sacred, I missed the theatricality of the robes and the night and the fire. Spandex and hiking shirts didn't have the same dramatic flair. How are you doing this morning, Nicole? Michelle said with a smile as she gestured for me to sit on the bench across from them. What did you think about yesterday?
It was hard. Hard, but good.
My body creaked as I sat down, a preview of my 40s.
You've been using the gym?
Karma said. She had a blunt way of talking, almost without affect. Both mornings.
That's a change for you?
Michelle asked. She was thinner than she'd been when she was at the height of her fame. Her legs and arms were sinewy and strong.
Yes, but a welcome one.
That's good. We love change.
You do?
It makes you confront what isn't working in your life and hold on to what is. I nodded, but inside I wasn't so sure. I'd been in the same job since I graduated from law school. I'd been with the same man for more than a decade.
My personal style had crystallized at 23. I wasn't someone who changed much, and I'd always assumed it was because I was comfortable with what I had. But maybe I was afraid. Maybe it was easier to stay in one place rather than risk something new.
You don't agree?
Karma asked. She was the stronger of the two, her shoulders broad, her face lined from sun and hard work.
Well, you can say whatever you're thinking, Michelle said with a slow smile.
I looked away from Michelle's penetrating gaze. I could smell the lingering scent of the fire, like the morning after a party, and feel the hard wood bench I was sitting on. This place wasn't set up for comfort.
I think that sometimes people change just for change's sake, and that's not necessarily a good thing. It's easy to think that the grass is greener on the other side, but it isn't always better, just different.
Are you talking about your marriage?
I brought my eyes back to Michelle's.
Not specifically, no, but sure, we've had our moments.
And you chose to stay?
I did.
Why?
Because I love Dan.
Or you were afraid to be on your own?
Karma said. I stared down at my hands. They were swollen from the altitude, and my wedding band felt tight on my finger, the flesh rising up around it.
Sure, isn't everyone?
I felt the betrayal to Dan in those words. I didn't think they truly applied to me, but how did I know for sure? How did anyone know whether they stayed with the person they were with because they wanted to or because it was easy?
I think many people are fine alone, and many people are not, Michelle said.
Her blonde-gray hair was still thick and wound together in an intricate braid.
When I left my husband, it felt like the hardest thing in the world. In fact, the whole world was against me.
Karma murmured her agreement, and though it seemed like hyperbole, I knew what she was talking about. My mother had cried when Michelle and her husband split up after 20 years together, breaking up the band in the process. It was one of those breakups that was all over the news, full of speculation, with coverage that went on for weeks. It gripped my mother like few other things did then. I remember telling her to get a life. Who cared about some celebrity breakup? But a lot of people felt like my mother. Many others were invested in the relationship, one that had lasted when most of their peers' couplings had crumbled. They were a sign of stability, pop rock royalty, something to admire. All an illusion, I was sure, but we loved to put people on pedestals, then tear them down.
That must have been hard, I said.
So hard, she said, almost singing the words. But it led me to better things. The moment my plane landed in Tanzania, I felt a huge weight lift off my shoulders. No one knew me there. I could be Michelle without all the expectations and judgment. I could be myself without having to be in a couple. A few days after I arrived, I felt something I hadn't felt in a long time. Happiness.
Happiness is in short supply, don't you think?
Karma said.
It most definitely is, Michelle said. But it doesn't have to be.
I crossed my arms over my chest. Happiness. What did that feel like? I was happy when I won a case, but the feeling was preceded by the intense anxiety of flipping through the electronic pages of the judgment that appeared in my mailbox without warning, setting my heart racing in a way that couldn't be healthy. Lazy Sunday mornings with Dan, those made me happy. A good container of sesame noodles. But these were transient things. I didn't need therapy to know I wasn't happy on a regular basis.
More happiness in the world would be good, I said.
There was a pause while I waited for them to ask me if I was happy. Was I going to lie? Somehow it felt as if they already knew the answer.
Is that something that happens in the group? I said to fill up the silence. Does it promote happiness? Karma nodded slowly. Group structures do promote joy, particularly for women. Did you know that men are happier married and women are not?
I'd read that. It seemed like a broad generalization.
Men like to be taken care of.
And women get used up taking care of them, Michelle said. That's where we come in.
You're going to take care of my husband? I joked.
No, but we are going to help you with some of the other things in your life. Worrying about your career, trying to figure out how to stay relevant, to keep climbing the ladder. All of that will be much easier for you now.
And that will give you peace, Karma added, to focus more on yourself, to find the things that can make you happy.
That sounds great. What's the catch?
We don't think about it like that.
Sorry?
It's fine. We get it. This is unusual.
Michelle waved her hands around. Whether she was indicating the ranch or Panthera wasn't entirely clear.
As we said before, we expect our members to help one another when required. That's not a catch. That's a promise.
I got it.
You sound hesitant.
I'm just trying to figure out why you picked me. All of these other women are so accomplished.
Karma frowned.
You don't think you're accomplished?
Well, yes, I've done some things, but I'm not in the same league as Athena or Connie.
We know.
Ouch.
So what am I doing here?
Karma leaned forward with purpose.
They weren't who they are now before they joined their prides either. They're the evidence that this works. Us working together, being there for one another, being a woman's club in a boys' club world, doing overtly what men have been doing forever. You can reach the same heights as they have.
I'm flattered.
You don't need to be. You've worked hard.
I had, goddammit. I worked so hard. Too hard.
I have. What do you think is holding you back?
The points committee, I wanted to say, but they were the symptom, not the cure.
Honestly, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it's me, like I'm too aggressive or rub people the wrong way, like I don't fit in. I'm too picky, I know. I care too much.
These are good qualities, Karma said. They should be valued in your organization, not a handicap.
You're right.
But it happens to women all the time. The same things that we value in men are seen as a deficit.
It's true.
You sound skeptical.
I'm not. This is hard to explain, but I grew up with the idea that we could be genderless, you know? Like, if we were competent and didn't focus on that stuff, then everyone would treat you like that, too.
Michelle smiled gently. Has that been your experience?
Sometimes. I mean, I see differences. I know that there are guys who can get away with things that women can't. But it's better than it was. At least the men are mostly trying now.
And yet, you feel like you've hit a wall, that you're going backward in your career.
Yes, but that's happened to men in my office, too.
It had happened to Dan.
I'm sure it has, but it doesn't have to happen to you.
I felt an overwhelming sense of relief. If what they were saying was true, it was exactly what I needed. I wanted my career to keep going forward, not back, to feel valued as if everything I'd worked for hadn't been in vain. I wasn't someone who liked asking for help, but I needed it.
I'd really like that.
Good. It's yours for the taking, if you like.
I would.
They smiled.
We're so happy, Michelle said.
Is that it? I'm in?
If you complete today's challenge, yes, Karma said. I thought back to my conversation with Connie and Athena at dinner. Is that the test?
No, the test is something larger, more significant.
Michelle moved her hands in a reassuring way.
But that will come later. We think it's important to put our members through a series of trials to assess your resolve and your commitment. We want to be sure that you'll be able to weather what you need to in the future. So today's challenge will be a test of sorts, but you'll continue to be tested in other ways throughout your time in Panthera.
Will it be hard?
It will be a challenge, but we have faith in you.
And your pride will be there to help you, Karma added. You'll do it together.
They were trying to encourage me, but I couldn't help eyeing the mountains behind them, so impossibly tall and far away.
I was in terrible shape, my whole body aching from 2 days of exercise. There was no way I was going to climb a mountain like the one Athena had, regardless of what kind of support I got from the others.
We're confident that today's challenge is something you can accomplish, Karma said, reading my mind.
I hope so.
We know so, and it will begin this afternoon. Meet back here at 4. You'll find a backpack in your room. Pack for overnight.
Any other clues? I asked as I stood to leave.
Karma laughed for the first time, a deep, sonorous tone that resonated in my chest.
Now what would be the fun in that?
Chapter 12. Into the Woods. Then, July. What did packing for overnight mean? I tried to think back to that camping trip I'd taken with Dan so many years ago. We were supposed to hike into the backcountry and camp overnight at a place he'd gone as a child, and then complete the rest of the climb to the top of Mount Marcy the next day, the highest peak in the Adirondacks. But when we'd gone into the lodge to register, a ranger had spoken to us about the bear situation and how we had to have all our food packed away by 4 p.m., and even Dan had been unenthusiastic. So we'd pitched our tent at a campground nearby and then hiked the entire 10 miles from base to peak in one day. It wasn't a technical climb, and I was in better shape back then, but 10 is a lot of miles. And when we got to the top, the wind was ripping across the blasted rock and there was still snow in shady spots. I was cold and miserable, and I burst out crying when my hat blew away. Dan wrapped me in his rain jacket and promised to never take me hiking again, and we made it down and past my deception, which he still liked to kid me about now and again. None of this provided any insight into what I should pack. I understood the idea of challenges, at least I thought I did, but I still didn't have a handle on what the test was. Something big, obviously. Something I'd know was happening when it happened, Connie said. I wished I knew more so I could study and plan, so I could control the outcome. But no, that's what I always did. Looked ahead and thought of all the things that could go wrong. Disasterizing, I called it. Seeing the tornado before it formed, the hail before it fell. It was supposed to help me deal with what was to come, to make me less anxious when it inevitably did. But it didn't work. Instead, I suffered twice. It was something I knew I had to work on, so I vowed to concentrate on the task at hand, and I took out my warmest sweater, the rain jacket Dan had suggested I pack, a pair of long underwear, ditto Dan, and a puffy vest I'd forgotten about but found at the back of my closet. Extra underwear, hiking shorts, and some t-shirts went in too. And as a last-minute addition, the phone Dan had given me, buried deep inside the pack, in case the disaster came.
So this is the plan, Karma explained when we'd assembled at the fire pit with our gear.
At 4 o'clock, the sun was still beating down hard, the thinner atmosphere making it feel stronger than it did in New York, but without the humidity.
Gary will take each of you to a separate corner of the property.
You'll be blindfolded on the way there so that your location will be unknown to you. You'll have a map and a compass. You need to find one another before dark, set up the tent, and spend the night.
Is that all?
Heather asked in a tone halfway between sarcasm and nonchalance. Her hair was in a thick French braid, and she had a strip of sunburn across the bridge of her nose.
I'm glad you feel you're up to the challenge, Heather, Michelle said.
I smiled at Michelle, and she gave me an answering smile back. That afternoon, I saw the advantage of her long, flowing robe, which seemed to create its own breeze and was a good screen from the elements. She'd put on a broad straw hat as well. All she needed was an English garden to lounge in. Heather shrank into herself, chastised.
Are blindfolds really necessary? I asked nervously. I might have decided to let go of my control issues, but there was a limit. I'd never been into any kind of blindfold, metaphorical or otherwise.
We want to make this as challenging as possible, Karma answered, to assess your ability to adapt and follow instructions. If you do, then you should have no issues.
Gary was standing behind Michelle and Karma, smirking slightly.
What was the appeal of Gary?
Did it matter? I was feeling hostile toward him because he was the one who was going to blindfold me. He hadn't done anything to invoke my ire except follow instructions.
Does everyone know how to use a compass? Karma asked.
Why don't you assume we don't? Samantha said with a nervous smile. And explain it to us like we're children.
Athena laughed.
Compass for dummies?
Precisely. I was glad Samantha had spoken up. My time in the Girl Scouts was a long time ago, and I didn't want to find out that I'd forgotten how to read a compass when it was too late. Karma took hers out and went through the basics, showing us how to find north, how to get to a point on a map. I concentrated as best I could, but I continued to feel anxious. At least we weren't climbing some massive mountain. Mount Marcy had nearly sunk me, and it was something that people ran up on a regular basis. When Karma was done, Gary handed us our supplies for the night. A package of food that could sustain us for 24 hours if necessary, a 2-liter water bottle, a sleeping bag, part of a tent.
You'll all need to come together to have true shelter tonight, Michelle said. Otherwise, you'll be sleeping under the stars.
We nodded grimly. It was already 4:30. It got dark at 9. Depending on how far apart we were dropped, it was going to be a struggle to get to where we should be on time.
Can I have a flashlight? Heather asked.
Or matches? Samantha added.
You'll have both, Michelle said, holding out a box. There's a headlamp for each of you, and matches in the food packet, as well as a collapsible cup and iodine pills. Follow the directions if you need more water than what's in your water bottles.
You'll need more water than that, Karma said. Most hikers who get lost die of dehydration. Don't be one of them. There's plenty of water out there. Water should be your first priority.
Even over finding each other? I asked.
Both should be a priority. Remember, you're stronger together.
Wasn't that your campaign slogan, Athena?
Heather quipped.
Something like that.
Well, if it worked for Athena, it must be the right way to go, I said, and Athena grinned at my positivity.
Anyway, should we get this show on the road? Sun's a-wasting.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, Nicole, Michelle said.
All right, then. Load up.
We each took a headlamp, put the supplies Gary had given us in our packs, and lifted them, heavy with food and water, onto our backs. Then we climbed into the large four-track Gary had pulled up. Gary moved among us with a set of bandanas, tightening each one across our eyes with a sure knot at the back of our heads. It let the light in, but it was muted and smelled vaguely of sweat. When each of us was blindfolded, Gary started the engine and put it into gear. as we kicked up a cloud of dust that I could taste rather than see and left Michelle and Karma behind. Michelle's assumption that I was embracing this task with zeal lingered. Because as much as she seemed able to intuit about me, she'd gotten that one wrong. I wasn't enthusiastic. I was afraid of the dark. 30 minutes later, after Gary removed my blindfold and made sure I had all my equipment, he drove off with the others and I was alone. I took in my surroundings, enjoying the fresh air, the scent of the grass, and the mild perfume of wildflowers with something feral underneath. I was standing next to a log fence. On the other side of it was a large herd of cattle. There were barbed wires between the logs, but I couldn't tell if the fence was electrified or if the cattle were happy to stay inside their enclosure. I'd never seen cattle up close before, other than in a movie, and I wasn't prepared for their size and smell. They were fascinating to watch, but the sun was racing across the sky and I had 2.5 hours to find the others before I'd start getting panicky, so it was time to get a move on. Karma said that the priority was water. I had a lot of it, though, so I was okay for the time being. I checked the map I'd been given. By my admittedly easily wrong calculations, the point I was headed for was 3 miles away. At a normal walking pace, that should take me an hour or so. But I'd never walked with this much weight on my back over uneven terrain, and I could already feel it slowing down my steps. There also wasn't a path to follow, just a field full of tall grass. To the right was a wooded area, and somewhere in there, again, if I was reading the map right, a stream. Maybe the same one we'd gone for a dunk in the day before. I had a terrible sense of direction, and the blindfold hadn't helped. It occurred to me that it might be easier to walk through the woods than the field, or at least along the edge of the woods. I didn't know, but I knew someone who did. I dug into my pack and pulled out Dan's phone. No bars. That idea was out the window. I put the phone away and willed myself to concentrate. I had to walk northwest for an hour, and then I should be there. I could do this. I put the compass in my hand, found my direction, and started walking. It didn't take long for me to come to the first barrier, another fence with more cattle on the other side. I didn't know much about hiking, but I knew that getting into a pen with 1,000-pound animals was a bad idea. I walked along the fence line and ended up at the woods after all. I stopped for a breath, wiping my face with my shirt, and then took a long drink of water. It was still cool in the canteen, and it felt so good in my throat that I had to will myself not to drink too deeply. I checked the compass. I was now off course, but not too badly. Once I got past this obstacle, I'd be able to track back to where I needed to be. The worst thing about following the map, though, was that I had no idea how far I'd come and no way of judging it. There weren't any road signs out in the woods, no distance markers. I realized too late that I should have started a walk on my Apple Watch. It didn't have cell service on it, but at least it could track how far I'd gone. I opened the exercise app and started an outdoor walk. I'd already been hiking for 20 minutes, so hopefully the measurements wouldn't be too far off. A mile, maybe. I took another drink of water and walked into the shade of the trees. The air smelled like rotting wood and cold water, and it felt odd to be alone in the woods. My footsteps sounded loud. And there were other sounds, shuffles and creaks, cries and grunts that got my imagination working overtime. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Lions were impossible. Though maybe I was wrong about that. Were there mountain lions in Colorado? Maybe. Bears, on the other hand. Oh, God, how had I not thought about bears? There were definitely bears around. Why hadn't they given us bear spray or a whistle? Did that even work? "Breathe slowly," a voice said behind me, making me jump. I turned around, but I already knew who it was.
Athena, where did you come from?
She gave me a friendly smile. Her hair was in a braid and held back from her face with a thick cotton headband. She looked comfortable in her hiking boots, like they were part of her usual attire. Her water bottle was hanging from one side of her pack, and there was a machete hanging off the other. She should shoot a campaign video out in the wild, I thought. She looked so outdoorsy and approachable.
I got dropped off near here, then saw you heading into the woods and thought I'd make sure you were okay.
I put my hand against a tree to steady myself.
I feel a little like I'm having a heart attack.
More likely a mild panic attack. But don't worry, I have bear spray.
How did you know I was thinking about that?
You were muttering out loud, lions and tigers and bears.
Oh, huh. Yikes, I didn't realize.
How embarrassing. I kept putting my foot in it around Athena. Something about her made me insecure in a way I hadn't felt since I was starting out as a lawyer. And yet, she'd been nothing but friendly and welcoming to me.
It's okay. There are bears around. Here, take this.
She handed me a lanyard with a whistle hanging off it. The whistle scares the bears. The bears don't want to eat us. They just want us to stay away from them.
Let's do that, then.
Athena checked her watch.
We should get going. Still a couple of miles to go.
Am I at least heading in the right direction?
You are.
She started walking, and I followed her. In a few minutes, we'd skirted the cattle pen and were back in the field.
We need to go there, Athena said, pointing to another stand of trees that looked small in the distance.
The path between us and that point seemed clear, if far. I checked the time. It was already close to 6.
Will we make it before sunset?
We should, but we have to cross the river.
Another river?
Athena smiled grimly.
You didn't expect it to be easy, did you?
No.
So, one foot in front of the other, and we'll get there.
I'm glad you're here.
We're a team.
She walked ahead of me. She had fantastic posture, her shoulders unbowed by the weight of her pack. She strode with assurance, like she knew where she was going, which maybe she did.
Have you been here before? I asked, coming up next to her.
In this exact place? No.
But you know the area, right? You've spent a lot of time here?
Some. Why do you ask?
Just making conversation.
She glanced at me.
Hoping to keep the bears at bay?
That's right.
You do seem to have a lot of fears, Nicole.
I looked down at the ground. My boots were caked with mud, the laces twisted with the long grass we were walking through.
Before this trip, I wouldn't have classified myself as someone who was fearful, but all Athena had seen were my fears.
Life was like that sometimes. It conspired against you in a way that made someone feel as if you were one way when you really weren't.
I have some, just like everyone does. You do too, right? Hence the Xanax?
True.
I was worried we were going to have to climb that mountain.
Athena shook her head.
They never repeat themselves.
That's good.
We walked in silence for a few more minutes.
Has the group helped you? I mean, I'm sure it has, but how specifically?
Well, for one thing, I can say with 100% certainty that I wouldn't be a congresswoman if it weren't for them.
They're that powerful?
Michelle and Karma encouraged me to run and put me in touch with the right people in the party to get behind my candidacy.
That's impressive.
They're proof that if you put your mind to it, you can get what you want.
And everyone gets these kinds of results?
Athena adjusted the straps on her pack. If they put in the work and trust the process, yes.
How many people are in the group? Only Michelle and Karma know. Everyone is divided into prides of five, and we interact with them individually.
How long ago did you join?
4 years ago.
You were in another pride before this one?
Athena stopped and pulled out her water bottle. I followed suit, mindful of keeping hydrated. My bottle was now half full.
I was.
What happened to it?
She smiled.
Nothing. We've all been put in different prides. It's a way to share knowledge with new members.
Prides are made up of experienced members and newer ones.
Ahead of us, the tall grass was waving in the sunlight.
And we don't all get together at some point? No jamboree?
I've met some other members, and I know the old members of my pride. You can recognize them by the pin.
She motioned toward the lion pin that was attached to the strap of her pack.
But there's never been anything organized, no.
Why not get us all together?
Athena put her water bottle away and started hiking again.
I kept expecting her to get frustrated with my questions, but she seemed happy enough to answer them.
I'm not sure, honestly. The organization's not secret, exactly, but Michelle and Karma prefer discretion. That being said, Karma is fond of saying that sometimes it's better to operate quietly, because if they see you coming, then they can try to stop you. But if you're just there, steadily, working away, then you can get things done before they even know what's happening.
I tucked my thumbs under the straps of my pack, pulling them away from my body. My shoulders were starting to kill.
I get it.
It's a tactic I use in Congress. A lot of new members show up with big proclamations about what they're going to get done, and then they run into the same old slow-down-you-move-too-fast crowd.
I laughed. Now that would be a good campaign slogan.
Huh, sure. No one wants to know how the sausage gets made, though.
True.
Anyway, I got some advice from another member early on. Don't tell people what you're going to do. Just do it. And so that's what I've been doing. And it's working.
That's great.
It is. And it will be great for you, too.
A deer loped out of the forest, startling us both. We stopped to watch it, its white tail pointed upwards. I flash back to yesterday, the explosion of the gun still loud in my mind.
So everyone keeps saying, I said when the deer had galloped away.
You don't believe it?
We dipped into a hollow in the grass. That same feral smell I'd encountered at the cattle pen filled my nostrils, like an animal had been there recently. Fear crept back into my bones.
It's not that, I said, looking left and right, my ears alert. I'm just cautious. I got some bad news at work a couple of weeks ago, and I'm still feeling tender. I want to believe it can all be turned around, but I'm skeptical.
The points committee are a bunch of idiots.
True, but wait, how did you—
Stay still, Athena ordered, and I froze. I heard hissing, saw a flash in the grass, felt something whizzing by my ear, and then there was a great thwack.
Athena was in front of me on her knees, the machete in her hand and a dead rattlesnake cut in two laid out before her.
She'd reacted so quickly.
But I'd never even seen it coming.
Chapter 13. Survival of the Fittest. Then, July. Athena and I rolled into camp around 7, sodden from having to ford a fast-moving river that stood in our way. Connie was there already, and Samantha soon joined us. Only Heather was missing.
Should we look for her? I asked.
Connie shook her head.
We don't know where she was dropped off. We're better off setting up the tent and building a fire so she can see us.
But then anyone will be able to see us, Samantha said.
We're not hiding, Athena said.
Samantha laughed at herself. Oh, right. Too many movies.
Why don't you and Nicole set up the tent and we'll make the fire?
Sure, I said. But do we have all the pieces? We were each given a different part, right?
Good point, Athena said. Let's see what we've got.
We pulled out our sections of the tent and laid them on the ground.
Looks like we're missing the tent fly. That's good news.
So long as it doesn't rain, Connie said, looking up. The sky was starting to darken, the setting sun highlighting the gathering clouds. Let's get the fire made, and hopefully Heather will be here before that happens.
What if she doesn't make it? I asked. We just let her stay outdoors all night?
She has a sleeping bag, food, water, matches. She'll be all right.
I shuddered, thinking of the snake we'd encountered earlier and the bears we didn't. Even if she didn't run into a predator, it still sounded dangerous. Samantha tugged on my arm. Let's get the tent set up, okay?
Sure.
We walked away from where Connie and Athena were gathering wood for a fire and found a relatively flat spot.
Have you ever put one of these together before? I asked Samantha.
I have not.
My family used to go camping all the time when I was a kid.
Thank God.
Here, give me the ground sheet.
She pointed to what looked to me like a tarp. I handed it to her, then helped her unfold it. It was large and heavy, and I was glad it hadn't been in my pack, which I'd gratefully abandoned the minute we got into camp. Taking it off had briefly made me feel as if I were floating, but I was back on Earth soon after. Now let's spread out the tent base. When we were done, it barely looked big enough to hold 5 people.
That's going to be a tight fit.
I shivered. I'd taken off my wet boots and socks and changed into running shoes and dry clothes. Though the water hadn't been as cold as for the full dunk, I was still feeling its effects. Added to which, I was tired and hungry. I knew I hated camping for a reason.
What do we do next?
Samantha explained how to thread the poles through the tent, and we soon had a raised structure that was made mostly of mesh.
That doesn't look like much protection, I said.
That's why we need the fly. I checked the time. It was past 7:30.
Where is she?
Samantha hugged herself.
I'm worried about her. She doesn't always handle pressure well.
They should have given us radios. I gripped the lanyard around my neck. We could blow our whistles.
No, Connie said, coming up to us with a piece of wood in her hand. The point is to make it here on our own.
I thought the point was working with each other, I said petulantly, and I had help. Athena got me here.
That was happenstance, Athena said, joining us. And frankly, I probably should have stayed behind you and observed you from afar.
I'm glad you didn't.
She nodded. Look, we've got enough wood for the fire now. We'll light it, and if it's close to getting fully dark, we can blow our whistles.
Do you think that's a good idea? Connie said.
I mean, we have to do something, Athena interrupted her. Come on, let's light this. We walked to where they'd built the fire ring out of rocks. Connie bent down and struck a match, holding it to the aspen bark that was spliced through the miniature log cabin she'd made of sticks. Before long, the flames were dancing merrily, and Connie added wood carefully.
We can't make it too big. There's always forest fire danger around here.
I hauled my pack over to the fire and sat down on it, reaching my hands and feet out to the warmth. I could feel the shape of Dan's phone beneath me. Maybe I'd have a signal? If Heather didn't show up by dark, I resolved to check, regardless of the consequences.
Does someone have their map? I asked. Mine got damaged in the river.
I do, Athena said. What do you want it for?
I think we can figure out what direction she's coming from by seeing where each of us was dropped off.
Good idea, Samantha said.
Athena took the map out of her pack and unfolded it. I was dropped off here, she said, pointing to a spot about a mile away from where I'd been left.
I was here. I pointed as best I could to where I thought Gary had dropped me, based on where the river was and where we were now.
Here, I think, Connie said, pointing to the other side of the map.
And here, Samantha said, pointing to the middle. I puzzled it out. So if we were all put about a mile from each other and equidistant from the meetup, then she should be... I scanned the map and did some calculations in my head. Here, I said, pointing to a place that was south of where Connie had indicated.
Are you sure? Samantha asked.
It's like one of those LSAT problems, the ones with patterns. I'm good at those.
Okay, Athena said. So she also had to cross the river down here.
Athena tracked the blue line down the map.
That was tricky, even for two of us. Maybe she got stuck there?
Connie pursed her lips, then checked her watch. If we search for her now, we might all get caught out there in the dark.
Just two of us could go, I said, and two could stay here. But we should decide fast, because every minute we talk, we're wasting time.
She is supposed to get here on her own, Connie said stubbornly, making her same point from earlier.
But we're also supposed to be learning to work together, to make group decisions because we're stronger together. So I think we should make a group decision.
We vote, Samantha said.
Karma and Michelle like us to discuss until we reach a consensus, Athena said.
There's no time for that. Unless everyone agrees right now, we need to vote. I looked at Connie. Her expression hadn't changed. She didn't want to search for Heather. But would she give in if the vote was against her? Could she stop us?
Let's vote, she said.
All in favor of two of us going? I raised my hand, as did Samantha, and after a moment, Athena. Connie didn't raise hers. Okay, so we go. Athena, why don't you and I go, and Samantha and Connie can stay here?
No, I'll go, Connie said. Come with me, Samantha.
They put together a pack quickly and put their headlamps on, and without any further discussion, they marched out of camp. Their departure didn't make me feel better, but at least we were doing something. It was an anxious hour waiting by the campsite, searching the horizon as the sun set with a suddenness that didn't happen in New York. While I fretted, Athena calmly made dinner and served it to me, a casserole made up of half the food from each of our food packets. It looked disgusting, but tasted okay, and I ate it perched on a log, watching the horizon. I tried not to think about what would happen if they didn't come back soon. To cast the idea that this was a horror movie I was living in, and the field was the basement one character after another found themselves going into with none coming back from my mind. Thoughts like that weren't helpful. I ate as slowly as I could, postponing the moment when I'd feel as if I had to go out into the darkness and search for them myself. Athena fed the fire, and it was a sharp tower of light. They should be able to see it, even from far away. They should make it back before it got too late. So long as Heather wasn't hurt, so long as none of them got hurt and the bears or the lions or whatever else was out there didn't reach up and grab them. And then, right as I was giving up hope, as the minutes that I'd allowed until I had to do something other than wait wound down, I heard a noise and saw a headlamp, and the three of them stumbled into camp.
Halla-fucking-luya, Heather said as she sank down onto the log beside me and reached her hands out to the fire. Her pant legs were thick with mud, and she was shivering. I put my arms around her and hugged her quickly, then let go. I'm glad you made it. I was worried.
Heather looked surprised at the affection, then smiled.
Me too.
What happened?
Got lost. Eventually found the river, but have you seen that thing? I tried crossing it, but turned around halfway in because it was getting dark and the current was crazy.
Yeah, the river was intense.
Thank God Samantha and Connie showed up. I never would have gotten across it by myself.
You want some food, Heather? Athena asked.
Definitely.
Athena handed her a plate. Heather lifted it to her nose and smelled it.
Is there meat in here?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I put in the tin tuna.
Heather expelled a breath, then picked up the fork. Fuck it. I am so hungry, I don't even care.
I laughed. We won't tell anyone.
Heather shoveled some food into her mouth. This looks disgusting, but is surprisingly good. Right?
Connie and Samantha took seats around the fire, each with her own plate.
What were you going to do for the night if they hadn't showed up? I asked Heather. I had the tent fly. I was going to put on every piece of clothing I had and then wrap myself in that.
Why not make a fire?
It was too wet where I was. No wood, either. I figured it was a bad idea to start wandering around looking for it.
It's good you didn't, Connie said. You did the right thing, staying by the river.
I was pretty happy to see your headlamps coming, I have to say.
Heather scraped the last of the food off her plate into her mouth, then reached down and undid her boots.
These things are killing me.
She pulled them off, letting her socked feet rest by the fire. Steam rose up from them.
What about you guys? Did you have any trouble?
A snake almost killed us, I said. Thank God for Athena.
Heather shivered next to me.
I hate snakes.
Who doesn't? Samantha said, finishing her noodles as she stared at the fire. I was impressed with her quiet efficiency. She was the opposite of the actress diva type I expected, which I appreciated.
So what now?
What do you mean? Connie asked.
Do we get a medal?
Athena gave a small laugh. Not quite a medal, but yes, we all made it.
As fate would have it, Connie said.
As fate would have it, I repeated in my mind.
But it wasn't fate that got us to the rendezvous. It was working together. It was disobeying the command to do it on our own.
Oh, I said.
What? Heather asked.
We were supposed to help one another.
Connie turned to me. How's that?
We were given contradictory instructions. Get to this location on our own, but a pride works as one. And that's how we all got here safely. Athena helped me. You guys helped Heather. We worked together, and we made it. That's what they were testing, right?
Athena smiled.
You're pretty smart, you know that?
Sometimes. Connie?
That was the purpose of the exercise, Connie said.
To put you under stress and see how you'd react, if you'd rely on each other or try to go it alone.
So why put it to a vote then? When we wanted to search for Heather, you didn't vote for it.
You didn't? Heather said. Thanks a lot.
That was part of the exercise too, Connie said. Bucking against authority. We tend to obey a dominant person, and that happens in prides too. But often, in order to succeed, it's important to stand up to the person who's trying to lead, to assert yourself, even when you're being told you might get in trouble, that you might not get what you're fighting for.
I found it interesting that Connie was casting herself as the dominant person. I mean, she was, but I wasn't used to people being so upfront about it.
Doing the right thing in the face of adversity, that's what you mean?
Yes. You all have goals, and we want to help you achieve them. But it might not always be easy. It might not always be linear or obvious how to get there. You need to keep that in mind and learn to figure out where resistance is necessary.
Well, I, for one, am glad that you stood up for me, Nicole, Heather said.
Thank you.
Is this the test, then? I asked.
No, Connie said. The test is something larger. At some point, your loyalty to the pride will be at issue. How you come through that, what choices you make, that will be the test.
Why is that necessary?
Because that's how life works. Michelle and Karma prefer to be realistic about it and to control for it. The test doesn't have to be physically challenging. It's about doing the right thing when presented with a choice. It's about choosing your pride above all.
We watched the fire for a moment, letting her words sink in.
We should clean up and get some rest, Athena said. Enough lessons for one day.
We agreed and made quick work of cleaning up after dinner and putting the fly on the tent. Then, one by one, we climbed in, our bodies crowded against one another. It warmed the tent quickly, and though the ground was uncomfortable beneath us, I was content. We were safe. We'd passed this challenge, and soon we'd be home and reaping the benefits. I turned onto my side and dropped into a dead sleep like I'd fallen out a window, too tired to think anymore. Too tired to question why a test was necessary at all. Chapter 14. The Covenant. Then, July. In the morning, we packed up the tent, ate a quick breakfast, and with a map that Connie had on her, made the 6-mile hike back to the ranch. Without the disorientation of the blindfolds and the ticking clock, it was a relatively easy hike on a flat road. We arrived at lunch, ate, and separated to get clean and recover from a night on the hard ground. After a long shower and a nap, I checked in briefly with Dan, then spent the afternoon exploring the property, something I hadn't had time to do before then. I walked around the stables and watched the horses exercising in their paddock, their scent strong in my nostrils, bringing back childhood memories of riding lessons with my mom. She would have loved the ranch. She was always the one pushing us to do outdoorsy things, while my sedentary father would have preferred to watch football. He'd been felled by a heart attack at 60, and at his funeral my mother had looked broken, but also free. "I'm going to travel," she told me later at the house. "Go to all the places your father never wanted to go." It was my first year at the firm, and I was exhausted from the work and from the loss of my dad. He'd worked a lot too, all my life, leaving me mostly alone with my mom. I'd always meant to find the time to get to know him as an adult, but my time had run out. "That's great, Mom. Where will you start?" "Italy, no question." I hadn't thought she was serious, but she was. She took 6 months to sort through all their things, sell the house, and plan her trip, and then she was off. I followed her travels for the next year, always expecting her to tell me she was done and heading home. Instead, I'd received a call from the hotel she was staying at in London. She'd died in her sleep of the same thing that had taken my dad. No warning. I lost 2 parents in 18 months, and the total time I'd taken off to mourn them was 5 days. I knew at the time that this wasn't right, but I'd shoved those feelings away and gone back to my practice. 10 years later, standing in a tall grass field, staring at mountains that had been there before man had arrived and would be here long after we'd passed into history, I knew I'd made the wrong choice. I should have taken the time to heal, to travel, to stop and smell the wildflowers. Maybe that's what this time was, an opportunity to refocus on what I wanted from life and how to get it. After only 4 days, I already felt close to this group of women, particularly Athena. Dan was my family, but I had room in my life for other people, other connections. I felt different in this place. A good different. It remained to be seen if that was a feeling that followed me home or got lost in transit. "Welcome, welcome, welcome," Michelle sang to us that evening as we gathered once again around the fire circle as the sun set behind the mountains. We started with a greeting and we quickly moved through the group, rubbing foreheads. It felt intimate, even more so for having spent the night together in a cramped tent. It also felt less alien, though I couldn't imagine doing it outside of this setting. "How did you all fare?" Karma asked when we were done. She was wearing a different robe that night, made of a dark hemp material and cinched at the waist with a thick belt. Michelle's was made of a light, creamy, flowing material. Together, they looked like yin and yang, the darkness and the light, though I didn't think either of them particularly dark. "We made it," Samantha said cheerily. "That's great," Michelle said. "Any difficulties?" Karma asked. "I almost got bit by a snake," I said, "but Athena saved me." "And I got lost," Heather said, "but they found me." "How fortunate," Michelle said. Teamwork is a blessing.
She smiled at each of us, and we visibly relaxed. I felt like we were school children who'd been caught doing something naughty, and our teacher had just let us off the hook. Not because she didn't know what we were doing, but because she'd decided on benevolence.
Perhaps this challenge was too easy, Karma mused.
Not on my back, I said with a smile, and the tension broke so quickly I thought it might be all in my mind.
Karma nodded. As you know, or have guessed by now, we believe in challenging our prides. It's easy to work together when there's no true challenge. But under stress, the cracks show, and real leaders emerge. That is what we've been showing you over these last few days. But while you will formally come together as a pride tonight, the challenges are not over. Each of you will be put to the test at some point. You'll be faced with what appears to be an insurmountable obstacle. You might be afraid. You might think about giving up, but the solution exists, and it lies within your pride.
Karma swept her arms out.
Rely on each other, call on each other, trust in each other. If you do these things, you can overcome any test that we or life might throw your way.
She brought her hands together, palms touching.
I'm sure you have questions.
She looked at me, and I tried to hold my gaze steady.
But learning to put those aside is part of the test. If your mind is clouded with questions, you won't be searching for solutions. When the test occurs, do not spend your time wondering why it is happening. React, respond, reach out, solve. The reason for everything will become clear once the test is accomplished.
Karma dropped her hands and smiled at Michelle.
Let us begin.
This is our last night together, Michelle said. A beautiful evening for the pin ceremony.
As fate would have it, Athena said.
As fate would have it, we all said together.
Michelle held her hands out wide while Karma put a large log on the fire. Michelle motioned for us to form a circle, holding out her hands on either side and encouraging us to lock hands with each other. Heather was on one side of me and Samantha on the other. Heather's hands were cold, Samantha's the same temperature as mine. I gave them each a smile and squeezed an assurance.
Our pride is complete, Michelle said. It has come together through adversity, and each has her role to fill. You were chosen for your compatibility, but we cannot ensure that you'll survive and thrive. Only you can do that. Only you can decide to work together and create success. Are you ready?
Yes,
Athena and Connie said enthusiastically, raising their hands and pulling us along with them.
Michelle cupped her hand to her ear. I can't hear you.
Yes, we said together. Whatever life throws at you from here on out, you have each other to face it. You have each other to fight it. Are you ready?
Yes.
Good, Michelle said with a smile, and we laughed.
We lowered our hands at her motion to do so, and a hush fell on us.
Now, close your eyes and listen.
I did as she asked, experiencing that strange change from light to dark that I had on the plane with Athena. The fire crackling, the wind in the trees, the creaks in my back. I felt and heard and smelled them all.
Repeat after me.
We promise, Michelle said in a deep, sonorous voice.
We promise. We repeated, to put the pride before all,
to put the pride before all,
to fight for what we deserve,
to fight for what we deserve,
to receive our rewards,
to receive our rewards,
with humbleness and grace and discretion,
with humbleness and grace and discretion.
We promise, Michelle said, to say yes to our pride, no matter how challenging, and protect them from those who would seek to do them harm. We will celebrate our victories and learn from our defeats, and move through the world with love. Silence again, weightier this time.
Let's embrace our sisters, Karma said.
I opened my eyes as I was enveloped in an enthusiastic hug from Samantha, then a less enthusiastic one from Heather, and then all of us in a tight circle. We released one another and reformed our larger circle. Karma was holding a small box that she opened slowly. Inside, three pins were nestled in velvet.
Each of you will receive one of these. Wear it at all times. It's your way of showing your pride and of letting others who you might meet along the way know that you're a member of the group. It's also a reminder of the promise you took today. Nicole, come forward.
I walked toward Karma as she reached into the box and took out a pin. She placed it in my hand. It was gold, a lioness at rest and warm to the touch. Karma cupped her hands over mine and squeezed. The needle at the back pierced my hand. Ouch! Karma smiled.
A little pain to remind you of today. You should wear it visibly every day so that you can be recognized by others in Panthera. If you see someone with one, you know you can trust them.
She pulled her hands away and plucked the pin from my palm. A small bubble of blood rose up, but the pain was already receding. She wiped the pin on a small cloth that was inside the case, a small streak of red against the white, then pinned it onto the breast of my fleece.
I promise, she said as she pinned it in place.
I promise, I replied, then walked back to my place in the circle as she called up Samantha. I raised my palm to my mouth and tasted the blood that was there, sucking it away without too much thought. By the next day, I wouldn't even be able to see where she'd pricked me. Proof that something doesn't have to be visible to leave a scar. Now, October.
This isn't funny, Athena, I say.
No? She slaps her hands against her sides. No, it's not funny. I feel weird.
She's pale, and there's a blue tinge to her lips. It's the shock.
What?
You're in shock. Are you cold?
So cold.
Go sit in the living room and turn on the fire. Wrap yourself in a blanket.
Athena nods but makes no move to follow my instructions. She's only a few years younger than me, but right now it feels like she's my child.
Go, Athena. Do you need help?
No, I got it. Fire. Blanket. Yes, good idea.
She walks out of the kitchen, and now I'm alone with the ticking clock on the wall that tells me I have only seconds to act or I'm going to be in trouble. Forget that. I'm already in trouble. My phone buzzes. I check it reflexively. Go get the gun. She knows what I should do. She always has. She's monitoring me somehow. Through cameras? Through my phone? Who knows? It's not important. What's important is that I obey. Obey. It's a word I didn't even use at my wedding, and now here I am, feeling as if I have to do so or face the consequences. But that's wrong, too, because I'll face the consequences whether I obey or not. At least someone is guiding the process. Someone knows how this is all going to go and has seen around the corners I didn't know were there. That's the thing about obedience. It feels safe. But it's only safe if the person has your best interest at heart. And here, my interest doesn't matter at all.